Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for listening to What Mama Wants. Personally, I think Mother Earth wants far less toxics and more health for her planet. This show is a chance to hear from educators, citizens, policymakers, and scientists about the role toxics, like PET plastics, PFAS, and pesticides, are playing in our daily lives. My guest today is Rupa Krithivasan. She is a PhD with a background in social, ecological, and conservation research, who's just written a paper called Problem Plastic: How Polyester and PET Plastic Can Be Unsafe, Unjust, and Unsustainable Materials. Rupa lives in Southern Nevada and is the director of research for Defend Our Health. Thank you for joining me on What Mama Wants today, Rupa.
Thank you so much for having me, Kate.
You have just published a 68-page report on the harms of plastic, and it successfully underscores what a colossal problem plastics have become on this planet. And I wondered if you could tell us what you found in the process. Why is plastic a bigger problem than we even think?
Yeah, I think that plastic is something at this point in the history of humanity we all use and we're all very familiar with because it's everywhere in our homes. But we've also gotten to the point where we recognize that it's not all puppies and rainbows. It's a problematic material. And for most of us, what we recognize as a problem with plastic is that it is everywhere and it turns into trash, and that trash ends up everywhere. So that's a part of the problem a lot of us have our heads wrapped around. But the actual problem is so much bigger than that. And it starts with plastic being manufactured in the first place. Plastics come from fossil fuels. Fossil fuels at this point, we know, are a tremendous contributor to climate change. And so that's the beginning of the problem right there. That is where plastics come from. But then to get from those fossil fuels to the nice plastic bottles and random toys and stuffed animals and everything else we have in our homes, there are a bunch of steps that go from processing those fossil fuels into a bunch of precursor chemicals. Those processing steps involve putting a lot of chemical releases into our air, into water bodies, injecting them into the ground. Those chemicals are toxic themselves. And then plastics also have a bunch of other chemicals added to them that end up in the products that we use. So from going from a fossil fuel to a nice, shiny plastic product, you have communities that are impacted by their manufacture. Their water and their air is polluted, and these are often communities that have historically been marginalized. And then you have the impacts on consumers, because we are handling and drinking from and eating from these products that have a number of chemicals that we don't even realize are there. There's no reason for us to think that they might be harmful to us. But as we learn more and more about the toxic nature of plastics, we know that phthalates, PFAS, a number of other additives like antimony that are used to make the plastic, these are remaining in the plastic, these are entering our bodies and have long-term consequences for our health. So the plastic problem isn't just about the trash you see blowing in the wind that you see giant patches of in the ocean. It literally starts when that plastic is made and every step along the way before it gets to your home and as it becomes trash as well.
That's mighty overwhelming.
Indeed. And I didn't even mention the part where they're implicated in climate change, because of course, when you pull fossil fuels out of the ground and as you manufacture them, that requires energy, that requires an addition of all sorts of other greenhouse gas chemicals. And so again, you've got climate change, you've got toxic releases, and they're everywhere along the production of plastic.
Yeah. So maybe we're not supposed to use fossil fuels above ground.
It would be really nice if we could find a way to mostly keep them where they are. Yes.
I would like that. Why aren't we emphasizing these problems enough? It seems like we don't hear about all the trouble with plastic as much as we use it.
I think that's a fair question. I think that for many of us as consumers living in cities and suburbs, we're just so disconnected from the process. We're so disconnected from all of the fence line issues associated with these products. But there are so many communities, there are thousands of people across America, all over the world, whose daily lives and personal health are so deeply shaped by these industries, and they absolutely know what the problems are. But to most of us who are on the consumption end of things, it's just an invisible problem. And the story is sometimes really hard to get out because folks like us at Defend Our Health and our allies who have for a long time been making noise about the toxic nature of many products, including plastics. For us, it's really obvious because we are contending with these issues. But for many people, they're mostly hearing what industry is putting out. And what industry is putting out is that these are safe materials. They are fine for the world and for the environment. And the problem really only starts when those pesky consumers don't dispose of them correctly, or when people who are not them irresponsibly landfill or improperly recycle or fail to recycle their wonderfully recyclable products. So these massive PR machines that are very well funded, again, by the same industries that are pulling all of these fossil fuels out of the ground, they're working really hard to convince you that the problem isn't their product. The problem is that they're poorly disposed, that they aren't being recycled enough, that what we need to do is clean up the junk in the oceans, without taking responsibility for the fact that the reason there is so much plastic and junk in the ocean is because they keep manufacturing massive quantities of these plastics that we don't really need. So I think the emphasis just needs to shift. And folks like us, we're trying really hard to let people know that we need to be thinking about this as a plastic life cycle problem, not as a plastic waste problem. And I think consumers are starting to get there. I think a lot of us are hearing the sort of messaging that we're starting to hear more and more about plastics as a bigger global problem. And I think, you know, that work will carry on, but we will continue to be fighting against very well-funded, large corporate entities that want to keep the narrative the way it is. The plastics are fine, and we're just not disposing of them correctly.
Yeah. I heard recently that some of the fence line residents who are suffering from terrible amounts of cancer and millions of other health ailments are about to do a funeral procession on Washington, D.C. Have you seen that?
I don't think I have. That sounds extremely apt. I mean, I think that, again, when you're living next to these places, the toll it takes on bodies and on lives is so visceral and real. And to me, I think it makes perfect sense that there should be mourning around the fact that what for the most of us is just a benign object is actually responsible for so much loss and pain for so many people. But yeah, I'd love to look at what those folks are planning. That seems both really beautiful and poignant.
Yeah. I heard recently that half of all of the pollution that's contributed to the world is contributed by 25 corporations. And it made me wonder, who actually is to blame for this giant mess that's being created, and how do we hold them to account?
Yeah, that's a pretty staggering fact. I think that definitely some of the blame, a large portion of the blame, lies with these companies that have put profits above all else and are really not concerned with the long-term impacts of what they're creating and the harms that they're causing. So I think a large part of the blame absolutely rests there. And at the same time, you've had a lot of foot dragging and disinterest from folks on the policy side of things. It's really convenient to overlook some of these massive problems when your funding is tied to major polluters. And so we do have globally, and in the United States in particular, laws that just don't have teeth, that don't hold up to their purported purpose of keeping its citizenry safe. And so I think that, you know, we need to think very critically about how we put power into the hands of people who can really push for the type of controls on these corporate entities that make them put people first and put the health of people first. And I think, again, there's a lot of really amazing work happening at the state level and at the national level to make that sort of change happen, to remind people in positions of power that their role is to protect people and not to protect corporations. And so, you know, the elections are coming up. I hope that this is something that resonates with a lot of us who'll be going to the polls. You know, figure out who's on your ballot and who's actually taking care of the people who are affected as consumers, as fence line communities, because they have real power to force change from the people who are responsible for these problems.
Yeah, I love that idea. Take it to the polls. If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to What Mama Wants, Less Toxics and More Health. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Rupa Krithivasan, and she's the director of research at Defend Our Health, and she's here to talk about how PET and polyester plastic is basically synonymous with the word toxic. From the time the fossil fuel is made into plastic to its long demise in the oceans, landfills, and polluted air of the world after an often relatively short use. So Rupa, it's hard to spin around in one place and not see so many things that are made of plastic now. Why is production so high? Things were all made of something else prior to the 1950s. And how do we determine what's essentially needing to be made in plastic and what we could switch to other materials with?
Yeah, plastic is such a convenient material. It can do so many different things. It is, at this point, extremely easy to manufacture. But as you said, it's not the only option. We have been living our lives and managing just fine for thousands of years without this very specific material. And so there's absolutely opportunities for us to take some of that back. And the convenience is one of the things that will make that transition difficult. But the fact that we are a smart species that knows how to manipulate objects means that we have hope to actually find alternatives. And of course, they already exist. So I think, you know, as you said, one of the most important things is going to be to identify what are actual essential uses. And I think as we get better and better at evaluating everything in the world around us, we'll understand just how much of it is non-essential. So I mentioned plush toys or stuffed animals earlier. We do not need our children's bedrooms filled with these, yes, adorable, yes, very soft and cuddly toys that are made entirely of products like PET. So PET is a plastic that many of us may have heard of. It's the type of plastic that's mainly used to make plastic bottles. We don't need plastic bottles in our lives, and we also don't need the fiber version of PET, which is polyester, which is what's used to make a lot of our clothes, a lot of our children's toys, stuffing inside them. All of these products are so ubiquitous in our homes. They shed microplastics. They are responsible for introducing some of the toxins in them into our bodies, into our bloodstreams. They show up in our urine. They show up in our nail clippings. As I mentioned earlier, antimony is one of those chemicals that's used to make PET plastic, and it is now known to be a carcinogen. And yet it's almost all of our polyester clothing and PET plastic products. And in almost all of these cases that I mentioned, in terms of toys, in terms of clothes, in terms of bottles, we have alternatives. We have safer things that we already know about that we can replace what we have now just put into our lives and into our homes. And at the same time, we also just need a lot less of everything. I think the moment we come to the realization that so much of the plastic in our lives is completely unnecessary, we have an opportunity to just scale back all of the consumption we see today. So, you know, one of the ones that everyone likes to complain about is all the packaging that Amazon sends out, or anytime you buy anything in the store, it comes in more layers of packaging than is absolutely necessary. Packaging is a big one. There's a lot of opportunity there to transition to reusable forms of packaging, to transition to reusable forms of foodware. Those are some of the easier ones. Some of the harder ones are going to be things like implements that people need to stay healthy, your medical equipment. And, you know, for some of those, we'll probably keep using plastics. Maybe we'll find safer versions of plastics than what we're using now. We probably don't need PVC, which is a much more toxic version of plastic than something like polypropylene or polyethylene. So there are places where we can go to safer plastics, and there are places where we can switch from plastics to a bio-based material or a plant-based material. And there are lots of places where we can just do away with certain things that we don't need in our lives. I think there's a lot to be said for really evaluating where our consumer culture has taken us and how we can step away from it a little bit.
Have you ever seen those pictures? I think it was a National Geographic project where they go around and take a picture of people in front of their house with everything that was in their house out front with them.
Absolutely. Yes, I find those somewhat terrifying, but also really illuminating. It really is, I think, useful for us as individuals to take stock of how much we have and how much we don't need. But again, I don't want to make this about consumers. I think there's a lot we can do as consumers and as voters, absolutely. But I also think we need to continue pushing on the people who are telling us that we need all of these things, who are insisting on making them and sending them to us and putting them in our lives. I think it's a two-pronged approach of consumer and personal responsibility while continuing to agitate for better practices from the people who are creating and making and peddling these products.
It's such a huge problem. We must go upstream. And I'm also sure there's not enough time in a day to figure out how to be a savvy consumer. You know, when you go buy organic broccoli and it's wrapped in plastic, what are you choosing? And I think at least 90% of parents likely believe that if they buy a cute plush toy at Target, that it's safe for their kid.
Absolutely.
I don't think anybody is even aware, like today on Momovation, I saw toaster ovens, how to get a safe toaster oven, because of course I don't have Teflon in my kitchen. And then I go and I look in my toaster oven and I'm like, oh my God, it's like a full-time job just protecting yourself from the products.
It's true. And even when you think you know what's in something, you don't always, because there's no burden of responsibility put on the manufacturers of these products, of the people who are selling these products, to let you know in transparent terms what it is you're actually getting. So you have things like California with Prop 65, which I think are absolutely headed in the right direction. But as someone who isn't going to go and test every single item in my kitchen or go and take little scraps of fabric from my kids' toys and put them under an FTR machine, I just don't know what's there. I am putting so much faith in these corporations to keep us safe. And that is a responsibility that they don't seem to think they have. And I think there is so much to be said for improved regulation that will force them to take responsibility.
Yes, it's the role of a government to protect its citizens, right?
Absolutely.
So, Rupa, with regard to plastic, when you think about Mother Earth, what are you thinking Mama wants?
I think Mama wants corporate responsibility and everyone to exercise their right to vote and for all of us to get outside and appreciate how perfectly terrific she really is. I think that when you spend time really getting to know the place you live in, your environment, the air you breathe, the water you're dependent on, your worldview really shifts to understanding just how much we can do, how much more we could be doing, how much just how painful it is that there are people who don't share that joy and that sense of magic with you. And it makes you want to do better and push others to do better. And so, yeah, get those companies to take more responsibility and get outside so you know what you're fighting for and vote. Please vote.
Yeah, great. Appreciate Mama. To close this interview, I'd like to ask you a few quick questions about your personal relationship with Mama, if you're game.
Sure, I'd love to.
All right. So as a kid, when you would play outside, what was your favorite thing to do out there in nature?
I was one of those kids who would definitely just lay in the grass for hours staring at a couple of ants. One of my earliest memories of summer was, I think, when I was 5. And a friend and I just watched a slug for, I think, 4 hours. It might have been less, but it was really just marvelous to spend time staring at teeny tiny, seemingly boring things and discover that they have entire inner worlds and lots of life stories and just immersing yourself in that. And I think that that's something adults miss out on. It's something I think all of us should do more of, but I think there's so many beautiful small things out there in addition to things I've gotten to do more as an adult, like going on hikes in beautiful places and giant mountains and, you know, exploring things at the macro scale. But there's so many little cool things out there too. And I think that was kind of my first introduction to just recognizing the enormity and the just constant inflow of fascinating things that exist in the world.
Well, that is a really profound foreshadowing for your career there as the slug watcher as a little girl.
Indeed. I did spend the first 5 years to a decade of my career working in conservation and in wildlife and animal behavior related things. My very first job out of undergrad was to study lemurs. I just followed around troops of lemurs all day in a beautiful scrub forest in Madagascar. And to me, I think a lot of my continuing interest in a safer world and thinking about that in terms of a less toxic world comes from wanting to protect not just humans and not just safeguarding the health of people like my own child, but also just the magnificent life that exists all over the world, all of which will benefit from a less toxic and safer world.
Beautifully put. Can you describe a scene in nature when you have felt real awe?
Yeah, this is actually from just a few weeks ago. My 6-year-old son is obsessed with whales, and we decided on a whim to drive out to Southern California, which is about 4 hours from us in Nevada. And we decided to go whale watching. And we expected, given the time of year, that we might see some dolphins, would probably stay close to shore. And we did. We saw some amazing bottlenose and common dolphins, but we also had the very rare opportunity of seeing a blue whale, which is the largest animal, not just currently alive, but to ever live. And as I said, I'm fascinated by small things, but there's also something really awe-inspiring about a 100-foot-long creature that we know so little about and that we had great luck to see off the coast of LA. And it was magnificent. It was really breathtaking. And again, like, it just gives you a sense of how much is in the world that deserves to be protected and all the different things we could be doing to make that life continue to exist. It absolutely took my breath away. It was very, very cool and very large.
And a brilliant kickoff for your son's future job as an animal researcher.
Yeah, or, I mean, last week he was also trying to figure out, you know, if he could travel at the speed of light and what would happen. So who knows? The kid's interesting. He could end up anywhere.
But lots of options.
Yeah, I do. It's always really fun for me to talk to kids, but I think they understand one of the big things that we don't, which is really just how much there is to marvel at in the world and how much it's worth it to protect it. And I love watching that in a small child.
Mm-hmm. What is one thing you currently wonder about in nature?
Yeah. I mean, from a work perspective, I am still fascinated by, and I really hope we figure out more about what actually happens to the hundreds of thousands of chemicals that humans are creating and putting into the world. In the long list of mysteries of the world that we haven't figured out, there are a lot of chemical pathways and life cycles that we have barely understood despite using them for our own benefit. So I don't know if this exactly answers your question, but I would really like to know more about where everything is coming from and where it's going. And in particular, I'd like to understand that better for chemicals that are likely to change our own lives and our health as humans.
Mm-hmm. I'm reading Ricky Pereira's book, and she talks about how the placenta used to be considered, when she went to medical school, as a protection between the fetus and the mother and the world. And in fact, for all time, it has been. But now that we create all these chemicals, it is no longer, and we're affecting unborn children with air pollution.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think there's so much to learn there. And, you know, a lot of it will be scary, and a lot of it will not give us a lot of, I guess, optimism about what we've done to the world and to ourselves. But I also think, you know, knowledge is power. And in order to move forward, we really need to understand what it is we're contending with.
I agree. So last question, what is your favorite baby animal?
Oh, that's a really hard one. I mean, right now, I might have to say baby porcupine, because I was recently reading a book about baby porcupines.
Oh, I've never seen one. Have you seen a real one?
I have only ever seen one adult porcupine. And for something that is large and lumbering and covered with a very unique textural outside, it was really easy to miss. It was in New England, and I barely saw it out of the corner of my eye, because camouflage is amazing. But that is the only time. I would love to see a baby one someday. That would be amazing.
Fun. Rupa, you are a deep thinker who can take academic findings and translate them for us into information that we can understand and use to create a healthier world. Thank you for being willing to sort through such disturbing and heavy material to make us aware of the science behind plastic as toxic ingredients to most of our lives. It's really not easy work, and I'm so grateful you're doing it, and thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you so much for having me.